All right, Thomas, just because Rage Master's not here doesn't mean we give up on the family-friendly rating for the show. So when we get to Tremors 3, what do we call the monsters other than what the film calls them?
You mean the ass?
Yeah, that.
We could try butt blasters?
No, that sounds like an adult film with more sequels than Tremors.
True. How about fart flyers?
Could you actually say that without laughing?
No, I couldn't. How about we try flaming?
No, think about that before you complete it.
Yeah, bad idea. Well, we could go with technical name from the film, Mexicana Combustors.
You know what? Screw it. We're just going to call them ass blasters and hope that the Rage Master doesn't get angry at us.
Agreed.
Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 126. What blasters? You know, Thomas, when I see the Rage Master, I have two questions for him.
Only two?
Two. I think I could say fart flyers without laughing. Far more than I can say ass blasters.
I'm laughing and you said it.
And I don't know where he was going with flaming.
I don't know either. I want to know what. Also, his first comment is right. I think butthole blasters probably is a porno. I almost guarantee it.
Yeah, it's probably out there.
Probably. So, but we'll ask him next time we see him.
Which will be when we get to review Tremors 4, which is the prequel.
Yeah, 4, 5, and 6. Yeah. Oh, boy. But this week, we're just reviewing 2 and 3.
Yes. We're going to cram Tremors 2 and 3 into one podcast because, quite frankly, I don't know if there's enough in either movie on their own to do a 45-minute to 1-hour podcast without it, you know, getting down side discussions into things that don't relate to the movie.
Well, I mean, with Tremors 1, you can, because it's the first one of a series, and it's introducing a bunch of stuff. This is just a continuation. And it's like, in some ways, stupidly. It's like, really, this makes no sense at times.
Well, and it's Tremors 2 moves even further into being a comedy and less of a horror/comedy movie.
Oh, it gives up on that completely by 3, and then it just goes out the window by 4, 5, 6, and possibly coming soon, 7.
7 is in production, and it's going to happen. Tremors 7, Island of Fury.
Oh, boy. I guess we will have to return to review that when it comes out.
If you remember, in Tremors 6, Bert is so old, he spends most of the movie in the equivalent of a hospital in Alaska.
Yeah.
Because he almost dies from trying to fight the Graboids. What is he going to do in 7?
I don't know. And he's the main character, as we find out, well, kind of moving into this, because he, in 2, he's the backup that's called in, but he kind of steals the show, and he becomes the main character.
He absolutely steals the show, which is why they go back and get Michael Gross and bring him back to lead in 3. And they don't go after Fred Ward. That's why they bring Michael Gross back for the TV shows. When you look back on this, it was supposed to be Kevin Bacon who carried the series. And I truly believe when they went to Tremors 2, they thought it was going to be Fred Ward and Earl who was going to carry it forward in that movie. And I don't think it was ever intended for Burt Gummer to become the breakout star of the whole series. That happens in TV shows.
Yeah.
It doesn't generally happen in films. It would be as if in Star Wars, Lando Calrissian became the breakout character, and episode 6 and 1, 2, and 3 all of a sudden became about Lando.
Yeah, that would be a little odd.
I don't think there was at any point in time where they thought as they were writing Tremors 2 where they said, you know, this is where we have this Burt guy take over the show.
Well, also, they never really had a plan for this, let's be honest. What you had Tremors, the first one, come out in 2000 or well, no 1990. Yeah, 1990, and then 6 years later it comes out two. It's like you're already pushing your time limit there. Then it's another 5 years after that you come out with the next one. I mean, it's not.
I don't so much hate the pacing on the releases movies.
I'm not saying the pacing. I'm just saying they didn't have a plan for this. They're just going with, oh, we can probably make money off this series and runs with it.
Well, it also could be that they pitched it multiple times for an actual studio release and eventually had to settle for direct to video.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, because boy, does the budget drop in these.
Well, and the most painful thing that you see is that there's no chemistry with the on-screen actors and actresses aside from between Fred Ward and Michael Gross. Because yeah. The guy who, Grady, who's stepping in to fill in for Kevin Bacon, he's the new guy. He does an okay job with the role, but he has none of the back and forth buddy comedy stuff. This is supposed to be a buddy comedy.
It's not.
And it's not there. There's more chemistry with Fred Ward and Michael Gross because they're the professional, you know,
Graboid hunter.
Yeah, but he's a professional character actor.
Oh, yeah.
And Michael Gross is a professional, even if he's not a superstar. So the rest of these guys, to me, they're more direct-to-video actors and actresses, and you're losing a bit of that skill and that craft that's there. And that's the thing that I think hurts Tremors 2 the most, is that chemistry goes away. In Tremors 3, it's gone.
Oh, yeah, and Tremors 3, it's just the butt show.
It's yeah.
It's like, okay, we're here for one character and one character alone who acts. The rest are kind of just there.
Jack is supposed to be the buddy character.
Oh,
and he's got the love interest, which is Walter Chang's daughter, but it doesn't carry. And now we're getting ahead to reviewing the film. So let's slow down for a second here and I'll go through a quick thing on Tremors 2. Thomas, I'll let you gather your thoughts to Tremors 3, and I'll pass the baton over on a review here. It could also be that Tremors 2 is more fresh in my mind because I didn't get to pay full attention to Tremors 3, and Tremors 3 is hard to pay attention to. Tremors 2.
Gee, thanks for handing me Tremors 3. Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome, Thomas. You're very welcome. Yeah, I did kind of just throw you right under that bus. So Tremors 2 begins with someone trying to flee from a graboid in a Mexican oil refinery. For some reason, the Mexican oil refinery is going to find Val, but he turns them down. So they come find Earl to come hunt their graboids while the refinery is shut down. And they got this guy, Grady, who happens to be a fan of graboids and graboid hunters. Don't know how he got hooked in or how the company hired him to go find the graboid hunters. But hey, Grady, there's your first and second contrivance that the Mexican government is going to hire some dude on a ranch in Nevada instead of actually sending the army or their trained professionals in to handle this. You find out that Earl blew all his money on a failed ostrich breeding program because his male ostrich doesn't like his female ostrich.
Quick point of point. Both of his ostriches are male because a female ostrich is all white. He has two male ostriches. That might be his problem on why they're not mating. I'm just saying.
Poor Earl. And then you find out that he didn't get any royalties from the video game, and that Earl is still just a dumb, dumb guy who doesn't understand the way the world works. And Val figured it out, and Val is living comfortably and doesn't need to come risk his life for $50,000 a worm. Earl, needing money, decides to go to Mexico to hunt the graboids. The Mexican army will give him anything he wants. And he takes some remote control cars and dynamite and a couple of guns. Things are going well at first. I have no idea why they left one scientist and a couple of admins on the refinery. But for some reason, again, oil refinery needs geologists. Okay, understood. Maybe they do. But why would you leave your geologist in this situation? And she doesn't appear to be like a corporate geologist, but more of a research geologist. But whatever. It's a convenience, and we need it for the plot to work, because Earl needs a love interest. She also happens to be a former playmate, and Earl had her picture hanging up on his calendar in his house to remind him to not chase after things you'll never get. Chekhov's gun. It's in the first scene. But, it's going well until it isn't. And there's too many of them. And Earl decides to call in Bert for help. Bert arrives and, of course, goes over the top and gets, you know, C4, an elephant gun, a 50 caliber, a whole bunch of other explosives that people don't need. And sure, the Mexican government's just going to give this to some dude they brought in from America to hunt graboids. Yeah, why wouldn't they?
Also, Bert doesn't check his back drops when he shoots. We learned that in this movie.
And so they go successfully hunting again until the graboids metamorphosize into shriekers. This gives you one of the greatest lines in the movie. Maybe my favorite line in the entire series.
And also
Bert gets ambushed.
Also becomes his catchphrase.
He comes back and he goes, "I am completely out of ammo. And also, I feel I was denied critical
need-to-know information.
Yep. The two greatest, that's to me my favorite point in the entire series.
Yeah, and from,
right there.
And from then on, that kind of becomes his phrase.
It's the Bert show. That is the point where the baton is handed to Bert. So the shriekers, they hunt by heat. They don't hunt by sound. They're faster. They can be killed with small arms fire. And they're really stupid. They will eat anything that has heat, including car engines. Once again, proving that graboid evolution is designed to create the most useless creatures on the planet. These things should have killed themselves by eating a lava flow. They literally, based on their evolutionary devices, would go eat a lava flow. These things should have died out within 3 years of being born or created. They're a terrible, terrible evolutionary design.
Oh, but it gets worse.
Yeah. So the shriekers, we'll get back to three where it gets much worse. The shriekers also reproduce by eating food. And as Thomas will point out later, there's something wrong with what the movie says, but we'll save that for Jeers. If the shriekers eat, they divide and multiply. And they divide and multiply. And of course, they lock them in the room full of sweet snack food and rice flour. So soon there's going to be a shrieker apocalypse. Except they figure out that Bert has a truck full of bombs in there. Earl figures out how to get himself blasted with a fire extinguisher so they can't see him. He also creates the rule that rock rips through paper because he loses the paper, rock, scissors battle with not Kevin Bacon. And successfully runs in, tosses a bomb in the truck. When Bert asks, where's the bomb? How much did you set it for? He just says, I just threw a bomb in the truck. And Bert flips out, yelling my second favorite line in the movie. It's going to be big, big. And Grady, after they run as far away as they can to do a ditch, goes, is it going to be today? And then the bomb goes off. And Grady should have died. Grady's absolutely dead from flying shrapnel. But he has character shields up, so he lives.
Somehow.
Everybody lives. The oil refinery doesn't care that they blew up the refinery. I'm sure they still get paid, although the damages should be taken out, and they should owe millions upon millions of dollars to the oil refinery.
Though he did kill quite a few worms, so at $50,000 a pop, maybe it comes out even?
No, that's... $50, $60, $100 million oil refinery right there.
That was a cheap oil refinery.
It's an oil refinery. It's going to be in the millions. There's no way he killed an oil. They were up to $300,000 a piece. There's no way they paid enough to replace an oil refinery.
Yeah, but we had a whole montage of it. Who knows?
Yeah, but they said they were up to $300,000 a pop. Now, if they pay him for all the little worms, you know, but at any rate, everyone goes their own happy way. Earl gets the girl. You know, the ironic thing of keep trying and you can get what you thought you never had. And if you just keep trying, you will achieve it.
Yep.
And Earl gets to ride off into the sunset, although it sounds like he's about to waste all his money again on Grady and Earl's monster world.
Yeah, I think he ended up being broke again.
Because $600,000 is not enough to open up a theme park.
No.
You're not going to open up a good theme park. So I have a feeling that Earl invested his money with an idiot.
Yeah, except remember in 3, there was kind of a theme thing going. So maybe?
It might have a better chance of succeeding than his plan to breed 2 male ostriches to create an ostrich farm.
Yeah, well, that one automatically, he's already has a better chance of making money off of this new investment than the old one.
Oh, poor Earl, you dumb, dumb idiot. But at least you finally got Miss October 1970-something.
Hey, there's something.
All right, buddy. As I threw you under the bus, are you ready for the brief recap of Tremors 3? Oh, and Rage Master, when you listen to this, I know appreciate how hard it is to tell these recaps.
Yeah. Also, you mean the Tremors 3, the Hindenburg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Graboidity.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Oh, okay.
The Voganity.
Let's go. Okay, in 3, we basically start out with Bert in Argentina hunting the Graboids, who have now evolved and split into the Shriekers, and just guns down like a bazillion of them.
With an anti-aircraft gun.
Yes, which... Great intro to your movie, which, by the way, this is the only one that's a PG, not a PG-13. Interesting intro.
This is also...
The setup for
TV. This is when I knew that this movie was going downhill.
Yeah. When it starts with that, and... Yeah. Then he returns to perfection. Wow. Great naming scheme here, guys. But returns to perfection, finds out... The town is changing, and it's been 11 years, and no Graboids have attacked. And now we got some guy basically going out there and jipping people for money by doing fake Graboid attacks. Yay. We also find out Bert really likes his technology. Doesn't mind hooking himself up to the government for a watch. Sure, Bert. Be a little weird. What else? Oh, now... This is when we also start finding out there's 3 Graboids that suddenly attack. We don't know how long they've been out there. We have to go hunt them. But now the government, for some odd reason, shows up and says they're now endangered species. You can't hunt them. Again, I don't know why. These things seem to be popping up everywhere, but now you can't hunt them. Sure. But now the government wants not to hunt them, but to capture one. Okay. Then we find out that when they're trying to capture one, while the government's off doing their thing, then they have now hatched. So now we have to worry about Shriekers. So we got to go hunt Shriekers. So you go out and hunt the Shriekers with your infrared satellite, which, by the way, Bert now has access to infrared satellites. Loves that government technology, doesn't he?
Bert is rich, by the way. He has to be rich. Because Bert, you never see him work. You never hear what his day job is. He has a compound that had to cost millions of dollars to build with everything that's in there.
The Graboid hunting
alone,
thing.
The guns alone.
Mm-hmm. Graboid hunting business is booming. But yeah, he's rich. He's got all the money. He's
got
satellites.
All Reba McEntire's money.
Yeah. But now they'll go after them. And now they get to the Shriekers after being stopped and being stuck for a while and find just husks. Because now the Shriekers have evolved into the next form. Sorry, Rage Master. Ass Blasters. That is literally the name they chose.
Do you know how long I've been waiting for an excuse to be able to actually swear on this show? Ass Blasters is when this show jumps the shark.
Yeah, because the reason they're called that is because, well, they have volatile chemicals in their... interior, and they fought out a fireball which propels them into the air, and then they can fly with their little rings.
Yeah, they glide.
So they use forts to propel themselves, hence the title of their metamorphosis.
We're gonna go with metamorphosis. At least the movie's smart enough not to call this evolution.
Yeah, they metamorphosize into Ass Blasters, and now the flying creatures again hunt with infrared now, again not sensing vibrations or underground, but now they fly and sense heat. And now you have this whole thing where they're shooting them and they have to make an improvised gun and a whole bunch of stupidity there. And they end up killing it all and happily ever after.
And they get a pet Graboid named El Blanco that they keep there so Melvin can't set up a housing development.
Also because apparently in this universe, albinos can't mate, but that's not how albinos work, but it does for the movie. Sure.
That's to explain why there's always one graboid around.
Yeah, that doesn't...
Gotta have one.
That doesn't seem to be able to metamorphosize into the Shriekers because it's albino, but again, not how it works movie. Well, this movie has a lot of problems with its science. Both of these.
So, here's what I've learned. I've learned a lot with Tremors 2 and 3. But I want to start with Tremors 3. Bert might be a murderer. He lured Melvin out to the middle of nowhere, left him on a rock with a graboid out there, and left him there to die. There's no guarantee Melvin's going to survive this. Melvin's an idiot.
Yeah. Except that I'm pretty sure he shows up in the TV series.
Oh, he lives. But so, at the end of the movie, Bert has left him there to die.
Yeah.
That's cold-blooded, Bert. That's uncalled for, Bert. That's over the top. If he dies, that could be considered manslaughter in some states. Probably not Nevada, but in some states, like Massachusetts.
Most states, probably. It would be considered, at nothing else, willful endangerment?
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, you just don't care because Melvin's supposed to be evil. And what is Melvin's great evil? He wants to put up a housing development.
Yeah, he's bad because he's trying to bring people to perfection.
He wants to develop perfection and make it more than an 11-person town that sees Bixby as the big city.
Right. It's like, wait a minute. He's trying to develop the town, Bert, from no one living here.
All he wants to do, Bert, is put in a housing development. You know, it doesn't mean you can't still have, I guess he wants to buy everyone's house to put up his housing developments, but I mean,
okay,
this is not real villain thing where he deserves to die.
No, it's also like, okay, he's buying your house. He's literally offering you money and it's a fair trade here. He's not seeming to gyp you for it. He's willing to pay you fair market value for your house and just be like, here's the money. You can have the money and just leave and
build a new compound 10 miles up the road.
Right.
In this middle of nowhere.
It's like, it's not like he's doing anything wrong.
What else I have learned from Tremors 2 and 3 is that graboids, well, they're like Bigfoot in a way. If Bigfoot was also the Loch Ness Monster and the gray aliens.
And also became very abundant all of a sudden.
Exactly. So the equivalent of what's going on in this film would be if we finally get a confirmed Bigfoot sighting. And then within 2 years, we get lots of Bigfoot sightings. And then we find out that Bigfoot mutates into the Loch Ness Monster as part of its life cycle. And then after the Loch Ness Monster is done with its life cycle, it becomes the gray aliens, which are abducting people to implant eggs in them to give birth to Bigfoots.
Yeah, so
Bigfeet? Bigfoots?
I don't know.
Big feet?
I don't know how you pluralize that one.
Sasquatches? Sure. Sasquatch watches?
We'll go with Sasquatches.
Sasquatch eye?
Now you're confusing me more. But yeah, it's like suddenly from one to a million. It's like, oh, look, there's Bigfoot down the street. That would be what the result is because it's like now you have them. Oh, look, there's just invading the Mexico. You have tons of them in Mexico. Now, Argentina, you had enough of them to get a whole army of Shriekers. It's like, oh, look, they're just everywhere now.
Yep. So these are Precambrian life forms, the oldest multi-celled life form on the planet.
Which should have killed themselves out a long time ago, but...
These inefficient, horrific creatures made it through multiple extinction-level events in the KT boundary, where, you know, times where 96% of the life on the planet died. And these things somehow found enough food to survive this when everything was dead. They somehow evolved to this size when there was only single cell organisms on the planet. Making it a Precambrian life form was one of the dumbest things you could do.
Yeah, especially when the life cycle is worm to big dog to flying dog-sized creature that spontaneously combust. It's like, wait a minute, what? These species should have killed themselves a long time ago.
They can't be a Precambrian life form. There's nothing for them to eat.
No.
I'm going to fact check myself here, Thomas, as you move into your next complaint with this movie, because I want to make sure I'm right about Precambrian life forms.
Okay, well, you do that. I will bring up this movie. Both these movies have a big problem with understanding, how a species reproduces. They like to say that the Shrieker eats a lot of food and then splits and creates another Shrieker. So they decide to say that the Shrieker is a hermaphrodite. Well, slight problem. A hermaphrodite has both sex organs and needs another hermaphrodite to, you know, do the nasty and mate. This does not need another one. It just reproduces by splitting, basically, and creating another one. That's called asexual. Asexual. Singular, meaning it doesn't need another one. It splits by itself. And they don't seem to figure that one out. They continue to say hermaphrodite. 2, 2, and 3. It's asexual. It's a slight nitpick, but it's annoying for me.
Well, what would you expect when this film, the writers of this film, say that graboids are Precambrian life forms?
When they were only, like, I believe, jellyfish and, like...
Yeah. As I fact-checked myself, single-celled organism, bacteria, microbes, and some multi-celled organisms existed, but they were all in the ocean.
Oh, great. So we don't even have land yet. Great. Yes.
So these underground landworms or land sharks that are Precambrian life forms somehow found enough food to eat by eating bacteria and jumping into the ocean to drown while eating jellyfish and some small segmented worms.
Also, weren't there a lot of volcano activity back then, which would have caused all of the shriekers, which weren't drowning somehow underwater, to run into a volcano, or maybe all the ass blasters to also fly into volcanoes?
Or did you just go eat them?
Yeah.
I'm going to go eat this lava flow. This is a nitpick. It's a big nitpick, and all this would have taken was some 5 minute of fact-checking. Put them at the time of the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
It's perfect. A big lumbering Brontosaurus. Maybe you're not going to eat a Brontosaurus, but whatever. A Velociraptor. There's plenty of small dinosaurs that they could have taken down and eaten. In this life cycle of evolution, it could have made sense. It'd still be tough, because it's an inherently terrible design, but there's zero possibility that these creatures are Precambrian life forms and survived in the Precambrian period. Couldn't happen.
Yeah.
It would be kind of like, it would go like that scene in They'd Live as Long as the Whale that spontaneously appeared in orbit in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Fair
and
enough.
And fell to its death.
Yeah, it would have had a very short lifespan. And if you believe in evolution, this is one of those very quick dead ends.
Yeah, this would be an evolutionary dead end where it would say this is a failed mutation. It's a very failed mutation. And the animal version of the Hindenburg probably wouldn't last very long either.
No, because if it brushed up against a tree branch, poof, you have a spontaneously exploding creature. It's like, well done, guys.
It would be like if this was this would almost be like another example of the graboid life cycle would be if you were playing a role-playing game, a paper and pencil role-playing game. You're multi-classing.
Okay.
And as your character evolves in multi-classes, like as a graboid, you'd constantly be rolling save versus tunnel off cliff or tunnel into wall. And if you failed your save, you die. As a shrieker, you'd constantly be saving against eat something hot or eat something that will electrocute you and kill you.
Yeah. Let me roll. I see a lava flow in the distance. Do I go towards it?
Yep.
Yes. Crud. I rolled another one. I guess I have to respec again.
As an ass blaster, you would constantly be rolling a percentile dice, and it would be like a 50-50 percentile dice, and every time you went to fly, you would spontaneously combust and explode. Player, I fly. I ass blast. Game master, are you sure you want to do this right now? There's no immediate danger, and you're just trying to show off. It's a 50-50 chance you explode.
I'm going to risk it. Roll it.
Roll percentile. 49 or 51. You explode.
And you're done.
Mulligan, mulligan, two over.
Okay.
Nope, I gave you your mulligan twice today. You blow up, the character's dead.
You have to create a new one.
But I laid my eggs first, right? No, your eggs exploded with you.
Aw.
Okay. The next thing. In Tremors 2, you really have to start working harder. And that's a lot to say, considering Tremors 1. To ignore the contrivances and plot conveniences.
How about the Graboids are completely dumb this time?
Yes. The creatures that evolved and were smart and could think and set traps and spit out the bomb just keep eating the bomb.
Yeah. Hey, did you notice anything about Bob? He went after that RC car and it blew up and he's just not here anymore. Oh, look, an RC car. I mean, they have an entire montage of it. It's like they're blowing up multiple Graboids with the same tactic. And apparently, in this huge swarm of Graboids, none of them have been smart enough to go, that little rumbling noise above the ground seems to signal death. Maybe I shouldn't eat that.
Yep. And this is not where it's been handed off to a new writer. The same creative team from 1 is the creative team for 2, so making the Graboid so stupid in the second movie is a big misstep.
Well, they also have the big stupidity of now cars are safe in 2. Because remember in the first one, they ate cars constantly.
Yep, pulled it underground. Pulled it under the ground.
But in 2...
They're under the ground, Bert! Yeah. I just caught myself saying that.
Yep. But now you got in 2, you sit on a truck, you're fine.
Yeah, it may pull the truck along for a while, right, but it ain't going to pull it under the ground.
No. And also, they never seem to attack any trucks or anything.
Right, like they did in 1.
Right.
Let's talk about the biggest contrivance. There's an oil field attacked by Graboids. The oil refinery doesn't go to the Mexican government for help. It goes to a couple of people who happen to survive 3 Graboids attacking them in the desert.
Yep. Makes sense. Total sense.
The Mexican government authorizes this. Not only do they authorize it...
Oh, they back up a whole boatload of toys for them to play with. And literally toys because it's RC cars, but...
They give them an open requisition form, which Bert takes egregious advantage of and even says, this may end up in my collection. It's an anti-tank gun.
Yeah, Bert might have... there's no might. He really overdid it. I mean, seriously, he bought everything. It's just like, oh, here's a few tons of C4, a few tons of guns, bullets. Just like, yeah, I went hog wild.
This would not happen. No. Argentina's not hiring Bert and putting all their faith in some whacked out survivalist anarchist living on a ranch in Nevada.
Yeah.
Not happening.
Argentina has an army. So does Mexico. You'd send those guys in first.
They'd go to the cartels before they went to Bert.
Yeah.
The cartels might have went to Bert and Earl.
Yeah. At least that would have...
said Bert and Ernie.
That would have made more sense if the cartels went.
You start this entire movie on these 2 plot conveniences, whatever you want to call them, that you're willing to look past. But it's a massive, you just start with, well, how do we get them there? Oh, the Mexican government needs help killing Graboids. What?
Did anyone think this through? How on oil field attack?
What? As you're breaking this story, you might have wanted to just said, you know what? Try harder. We failed. We don't have a believable beginning to the film.
Right. And then... Maybe you should have thought, okay, what is the next metamorphosis in this species? And maybe stopped.
Well, this was 1996, and I do believe it was slightly after Jurassic Park, and the Velociraptor was all the rage, and the Shrieker is essentially a Velociraptor.
It is. Look at some of these scenes. It's so copying.
It's a Velociraptor.
Yeah. Also, it's copying from Aliens, let's be honest.
It's absolutely borrowing from Aliens, and it's borrowing from a Velociraptor.
Yeah, it is.
That's all this was. It was capitalizing on that.
Yeah.
This is more of a Well, it's how we wouldn't do it today. Earl is introduced to Kate, and as she turns away, takes a nice long eye screwing of her, focusing on her behind. See, Rage Master, no gratuitous swearing there when I didn't need to.
But then
she repays it.
Yes.
You wouldn't have objectified this. And I don't think you'd have had her as Miss October, because you start the movie off with her as an object to obtain. And Earl even says she's up there to remind me not to go chasing after things I can't have. She's a MacGuffin. You turned her in almost to a MacGuffin. She's a Chekhov's gun and a MacGuffin. And then he gets there and the first thing he does is overtly sexualize her.
I think that was the second thing right after breathing. Because, yeah that was a very quick two. Ooh. It's like, wait a second until you at least know her name?
Coming back to it, I think we can move on to we've talked about 6 and 7 on our nitpicks list. Do you have any other nitpicks?
I do want to nitpick that 3 was a setup in a way to the TV series. Because of that, it really suffered, I think. Because it was slow, there was a lot of introduction of characters that in a normal movie situation would not have been needed.
Yeah, 3 is a complete setup to get to the TV series, and you're right, in a way it hurts the movie in some ways because it limits what you can do and what you have to do.
It's basically like, these are the characters we need to introduce because they're going to be in the TV series.
3 is definitely a setup to get you hooked for a TV series. It just failed because it was on the wrong network that likes to cancel shows, and there wasn't enough people, people who knew about it.
Yeah, and obviously 2 and 3 very much show that their budget was much lower than 1. I mean, 1 wasn't exactly a big budget movie, but these two were, what was it, like 4 million and 6 million, you said?
Yeah, 4 million and 6 million. 4 million for 2, 6 million for 3.
Yeah, it's not exactly huge budget movies. But, yeah, they did pretty decent with that, you know, budget that they had.
So let's get into stuff that we liked. And maybe even a conversation about a meaning that they might have been going to. And that might be difficult, but we'll try.
Okay, can I start with something I liked?
Sure.
Okay, my big thing was I liked Butt's character development in 2. He's probably the only one with a real character development, which was he got divorced, which, I mean, is bad and sucks. And Reba McEntire was an awesome character. Kind of wish she was still there, but he had character development. It's like his life moved. There wasn't just a stale, it's like, it's been 6 years and something's happened and something big. And now he's dedicated his life to hunting Graboids. It's a character development. I mean, he actually has development going for him.
Well, I want to start with what I liked is Bert. Bert is amazing. Bert is one of my favorite characters in any series. If you were doing like the all-stars of cult fiction, you want Bert in there. Like if I was coming up with an all-star team to hunt Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers,
I want to
go get Bert.
Yeah. A, he would have all the explosives and guns and stuff, but he also somehow is unstoppable.
He gets eaten.
Yeah. He gets eaten and somehow goes, hey, I'm stuck down here. Lure him towards my base so he kills himself and then cut me out with a chainsaw.
You want to talk about laconic, too. Out of air. Burnt out.
He doesn't go, I'm dying, get me out of here. He's just, nah.
Yeah, face death like a man. Then he comes out of there and he's like, I would prefer that we keep this to ourselves.
Yeah, I mean,
Burnt, he's got all the quotable lines.
All of them.
He's got, or almost all of them. He's got just the amazing quotable lines, and they're great. I can go through. And you know, when I think about the Bert lines that are so quotable, it's Tremors too. It's going to be big.
Yeah.
Big. Or, is it going to be today?
Right. Or, you know, I believe I have been misled there. It didn't happen. Very critical.
And I feel I was denied. Critical. No. Need to know. No. Information.
Exactly. I mean, it's quotable lines. He has so many of them. It's good. Oh.
I'm just dandy. He screams at the shooter.
Yes. Oh. Oh, you know, when he shoots the 50 cal and blows a hole in the truck.
I couldn't know.
Right.
I didn't know. How could I know?
It's like he doesn't stop. I mean, he's inside of a basket of a, you know, a cat over there, and he's yelling back and forth. It's hilarious. It's great. And this is all also where you just kind of go, yeah, this is more of a comedy than anything else at this point.
And it does a great job of being a comedy.
Oh, yeah. And
that leads into the next thing here. I don't know about you, Thomas. I love the fact that they figured out that the true identity of this film was not that it was a survival film or the franchise, or that it was a horror film or a sci-fi film, because it never was. But it's a character-based comedy.
Yeah.
It's more Happy Gilmore than Aliens. And they stuck with that. And I know you said that the personal development was with Bert, but I see personal development with Earl.
Oh,
you've got a lifelong loser and a guy who just screws up. He's a lifelong screw up. He gets opportunities. He screws him up. He can't make the right decision. He makes the wrong decision every time. He doesn't have the ability to see the big picture, no matter how much he wants to plan ahead to get himself out of his not great life. He can't make the right choices.
And he can't recognize male from female ostriches.
And at the end of this movie, you know, he says you spend a few days out here almost getting killed. You start thinking about what's important.
Yeah.
And he tracks down his dream girl. And you're led to believe that they go off to be happy together.
Well, you don't see him in any other movie, so I'm going to go with yes.
And Earl gets what he said Val wanted, you know, what he always, you see, he wants, because Val has it and he doesn't have it. You see the growth of this character. You see him wise up. You see him realize what is important is in his dreams of success or his dreams of freedom. You know, it's being happy.
Yeah.
And he figures out how to be happy. He figures out what's more important than what he's been chasing and what's right in front of him. And we're into a deep meaning here, and that wasn't where I meant to go with it. But I like it. Then you get to Tremors 3, which just doesn't care about meaning whatsoever. And we're a slapstick comedy from this point on, even though at some point we try not to be.
Yeah,
it just fails horribly with Bert's kid. And
we will get to that when we get to it next week when we review it. But yeah, 2 and 3 is when it actually just commits to the comedy side of it and just goes with it. It's like, you know what? This Tremors 1 was kind of funny. It had some comical moments. Let's stick with that. We're going to stick with the comedy and we're going to just go with the comedy all out. I mean, come on. Your new creature for 3 is called an ass blaster. You have to say they just threw their hands up and went, you know what? Let's have fun with this.
Yeah, and it's fantastic that they did, and we'll get to that in the ratings here. But there was something that I came up with on the fly here, and it's good because it's going to help us fill the last 15 minutes. Otherwise, we'd be rating it and ending now. You brought up, Thomas, that the one lady didn't change the batteries in her seismograph. And she looks at Bert and he says, it's been 11 years, Bert. And not only have the residents stopped changing the batteries in their seismographs, Jack is giving fake graboid tours.
Yeah.
They have gotten to the point where they're not afraid of graboids anymore. It has happened. They've moved on from it. And in their mind, it's never going to happen again. Only Bert is so paranoid that he believes that it can happen again. This is natural. I think this is common. You start to drop your guard. 9/11 was very recent.
Yeah, that was only, sad to think, but that wasn't that long ago.
And I mean 9/11 as in September 11th, yes. Was only, as we record this, 7 days ago. And on 9/11, I saw a whole bunch of "we will never forget" posts.
But
and I think we remember on September 10th and September 11th and September 12th.
But then it goes either to the back of your mind or completely out You're right, because then no one's like, oh yeah, September 11th, terrorist attacks, we have to be vigilant and constantly be on alert and go after. Suddenly it's no longer about that. It suddenly becomes, oh yeah, terrorists, that's a thing.
And people who, obviously people who lost people in the tragedy will remember more than others. Servicemen and women will remember more than others. First responders.
Yeah. Well, there's always that way. There's
we haven't forgotten it. Just like the people in Perfection have not forgotten the risk of graboids, but you become accustomed to it and you learn to live with it. And people who said they'd never get on a plane again, got on a plane again, and they get on a plane again. And they complain now about the lines they have to go through for TSA to get onto that plane so that it's safe. And there's a big argument. Have we sacrificed too many of our freedoms for a threat and an action that happened once?
Right. I mean, there's, you could argue that one for sure, but you are absolutely correct that we have, I wouldn't say forgotten. I mean,
but we become less vigilant.
Yeah. I mean, a great example would be also Pearl Harbor. I mean, we remember Pearl Harbor. It's a day that will live in infamy.
Well, some people do. Some people don't even remember Pearl Harbor anymore.
Well, remember it as in it was a thing that happened in history. I mean, I wasn't there when, but yes. It had some of the same lessons, you know, to be vigilant, to never let your guard down, things like that.
And not have half your fleet moored at one place when you're potentially facing a naval war, and then you have nothing between you and the aggressive power until you can steam the Eastern Fleet around South America to get it over, or South America to get it over there.
Oh, and also somehow be very lucky that your carriers were not in base at the time, because otherwise you'd be completely screwed.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, things like that. You know, some of it I think we've learned. We no longer base our entire fleet in one area, and we keep a good chunk of it moving, so there's something. But yeah, there's a bit of it where we kind of forgot where, you know, surprise attacks come and to stay vigilant and keep your eyes open. And we kind of let that one go. And, you know, congratulations, we got a surprise attack again.
But you move on. You move on from trauma. You live. Some people don't, but most people do. And the movie does a great job of pointing this out. You come back to Perfection and every single person there except Bert has moved on and started living a life. They're not living in fear of graboids. They're not living in fear of their past.
It's a good thing. It is something that keeps us sane, is the best way I can explain it. Because if we did not, as human beings, moved on from any trauma or anything that, I mean, someone calls you a bad name, and I'm not saying that's not a terrible thing, but if someone called you a bad name and you lingered on that for the rest of your life, and never forgot about it, and you never let it go, and it was always there in the front of your mind. Someone called me a bad name. Someone called me a bad name. That would destroy you. But you forgetting about things, we forget about stuff all the time. I mean, what did you have for lunch this Saturday? Do you remember?
No.
Last Saturday? No? Yeah, because you forgot, because it's not important. We forget stuff all the time, and it helps us. And we just kind of move on with our life.
It's natural. You have to. A healthy brain moves on from stuff and starts to live again eventually. That doesn't mean that if you can't move on from trauma, I'm talking about post-traumatic stress. I'm not talking about massive trauma. But if you're going to live, you do have to move on from that. Yeah. You can't live in that moment for the rest of your life. And I guess where I'm going with that in the end, in Scott's deep meaning, is Bert the tragic character? Is Bert the character who doesn't grow? Bert loses his wife. He loses, he never gets beyond being afraid of a graboid incursion. And he spends the rest of his life hunting them. He spends the rest of his life preparing for them. Bert will never, ever, ever feel safe until they're gone. And he'll never know that they're all gone. And Bert has never moved on from that day in Perfection Valley when he found out graboids existed.
Well, I think you're right in one aspect, but here's the problem with him. He was always afraid.
And this just, he used it as an excuse to amplify all of his fears.
He was remember when we first met him, he was a prepper. He was already afraid.
Screaming about eminent domain.
Right. And again, there's a difference between people who prepare for stuff, like having a first aid kit in your you know, car. There's a difference between that and what Butt was doing.
7 years of MREs in a safe room?
Yeah. And also an entire escape tunnel and complete wall of guns. I mean, there is a point where you just go, okay, dude, you have taken paranoia to the next level. And yeah, you are a little crazy. He was paranoid from the beginning. So
is he the tragic character?
I think he was a tragically flawed character from the beginning. And sometimes the best characters are the flawed characters. And he is a flawed character. Yeah. And he is in many ways a very good character because we all have our flaws and we can... Good grief. I'm doing your Scott's deep meaning thing.
Val and scientist lady, whose name I forget at the moment, they move on. And they use the trauma to tell them that life is precious and to go be happy. And to stop being afraid. Earl needs a second dose of trauma to learn that life is precious. Stop being afraid. Go be happy and live that life. And just realize, focus on what's important. Mrs. Gummer realizes that Bert is mired in, you know, she says, I can't live without the threat of thermonuclear war.
Yeah.
And you know, she has to move on from him because he's stuck in that moment. Walter Chang's granddaughter moves on. She's planning her life. You know, the whole town of perfection, Melvin moves on. They all move on. They use the trauma to tell them that life is short. They've got to live. They've got to be happy. Bert spends the entire rest of his life stuck in that moment, amplifying his fears.
And actually preparing and never stops.
Misses out on his son, loses his wife, misses out on everything life had to add, but those graboids aren't going to get him.
Yeah. Wow.
I found a Scott's Deep Meaning in Tremors 2 and 3.
Wow. And you actually made me start Scott's Deep Meaning. Oh, good grief. These Tremors movies has made me Scott's Deep Meaning. Oh, I feel like I need a shower. Thanks, Scott.
All right. How many 50 caliber anti-tank cartridges?
Rounds.
How many 50 caliber anti-tank rounds are we going to give Tremors 2? And how many ass blasters are we going to give Tremors 3? I'll start.
Okay.
Tremors 2. It is still a comedy, and I've got to review it as a comedy, not as a science fiction film. So I'm not looking about an exploration of the human condition. I'm not judging it on if its science is accurate.
Because it's not.
Or even on if the plot is good or if it's full of conveniences and contrivances. Does the movie make me laugh? Yes. Is it quotable? Yes. Do I like some of the characters and some of the moments? Yes. And as a comedy with rewatchability and a movie that I enjoy watching and that's quotable, it passes the test and I give it a 7.75. It's slightly worse than the original Tremors movie, but it's still a very good comedy that I enjoy watching and would watch again. Tremors 3. It's a comedy. It's a slapstick comedy. It's lost a lot of the character work that really made you like and enjoy Tremors 1 and 2. But it's still funny. It's nowhere near as quotable. And so as a comedy, Tremors 3 gets 6.5 ass blasters.
Okay. How do you do half of an ass blaster? Doesn't it explode then?
Yeah, it kind of twerked the fly and blew itself up, and all that's left is the head and the wing.
Okay, gotcha. That makes some more sense than the movie sometimes makes.
I
appreciate it. Okay. Tremors 2. You're right, it's definitely a comedy. It does have a lot of quotable moments. If I review it as a comedy, I don't think I'd watch it as often as Tremors, but I could rewatch this. I'd give it a 6. It's definitely a good in its comedy ways. 3, on the other hand, it kind of just threw its hands up and gave up. It's funny at times. Other times, I just want to roll my eyes and just groan. 5.5.
If you'd like to leave us comments, you can leave us a comment at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com, or you can send us a message at Sci-Fi Melody. Just a reminder, we are going to be at Goulardi Fest, which is coming up quickly, so we got to get those t-shirts ordered. We're just about out of time to do that.
We probably should get that done.
Yeah. We'll be in the row that Big Chuck and Little John is in, so when you're coming to see Big Chuck and Little John, come say hi to us. Next week, I think we're going to review Tremors 4, and then we'll probably finish it off with Tremors 5 and 6, and that leads us into Horror Month.
Make sure you enunciate, Scott.
Yes, otherwise it's Horror Month. And you can, you know, I don't know, if you listen to that quickly, you might think I said something else. All right, that's it for this week. What's left for them to do, Thomas?
Stay sick, sickies.
I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. I'm probably going to edit all this out.